A routine is a good thing to have. And sometimes a routine is a good thing to break. Break free. Start your morning at McDonald's with a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, or sausage McGriddles for just $1 each. And add any size soft drink for just $1 more. Because if you don't deserve a morning that's a little easier and a lot tastier, who does? Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Honey, it's our favorite time of year, and I got you something to celebrate.
A McRib! It's just what I wanted!
Happy McRib season, sweetie.
Mm, I love you.
I love you, too.
Mm. Actually, I was talking to my McRib.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll leave you two alone.
Right now, enjoy a McRib meal and get another tasty McRib sandwich for just $1. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Hello, everybody out there in internet land, radio land. This is the Dell with a delicious recipe. Tonight's recipe will be the Open Society Soros vegetable soup. And what I'll be looking at is the involvement of the Open Society Foundation and who they deal with social media projects, advocacy groups, and journalists that run stories to sway opinion. And who George Soros was, or who he was originally, Georgie Schwartz, and his involvement in meddling in with different governments and markets. And I'll go into that whole part about who he is and that. But first, I wanted to get to a story that I'm not sure if any of you had heard about or had followed. It dealt with Remembrance Day up here in Canada last week on the 11th. And it was to deal with a controversial TV hockey icon, I guess you would say, Don Cherry. And it was, I guess, a remark that was made during the show. And I guess how this will tie in later, too, will be how these groups there with this Open Society Foundation, their funds out money to these groups to cause social discourse, I guess you would say, or social change, a different way of thinking to bring up these groups to sort of how it's worked with the with George Soros, with his foundation, is to go in and change governments to put people that are like-minded thinking, like the Open Society people, into power to create this coming New World Order. And George Soros is also, as I mentioned before last week there too, was part of the, or is part of the Committee of 300, which is a group of people that include people like Bush, Clinton, Gates, the Royal Monarchy in different countries, and so on. But anyways, back to the part of Don Cherry. So he has this part that a little spiel that goes on there between the first and second period. And to know who Don Cherry is, he's a shoot from the hip, very gruff, opinionated type person. And that's why he was hired on by the league and by the TV station there to sort of give his opinion on things. And so what his opinion on last week was about Remembrance Day and the poppy. And what it, I understood the sort of message coming from my involvement anyways with living here in Canada and that. And the poppy is a symbol that goes on Remembrance Day that people wear to remember people that had passed on during the Second World War. And you'd have this ceremonies in school growing up and on Remembrance Day, and you'd sing or do the Flanders in Flanders Field where the poppies row by row poem. And all he was basically saying during this little spiel that he had there on during this Coach's Corner was that he noticed that a lot of people here in Canada, and Canada being an immigrant nation, which it is, he had said the part that he'd noticed that a lot of people weren't wearing the poppy or supporting giving the money for the poppy on Remembrance Day. And I guess he used the words, instead of using everybody that wasn't wearing one, he said, "You people that don't support." And so basically the message got lost in the part of what he was saying was that people are not supporting or remembering on Remembrance Day. They've sort of just forgotten about it. And he mentioned it down in Toronto and Mississauga area down there. And he'd use the words, the phrasing. He said, "You people that have come here and reaped the benefits of the milk and honey of Canada, turn your nose up at the poppy." And Remembrance Day, basically how you forget. And you got to figure, World War II was only less than 100 years ago, and there's still survivors living today that that fought in that war. And he was basically saying, hey, people would remember these people that fought. This is the reason that you have all these great things that you have in the country and that it's free as it is. Because you know what, the whole part of World War II there with the Nazi Germanys and Hitler and the concentration camps and all that war, the Axis and Allies fighting each other to defeat the Axis of power so that we have what we have here today, and where things have basically gone to now with the people that I guess are, like I said before, this hierarchy trying to control and remove the middle class. But those are all parts we'll get into anyways, again, and rehashing from last week. So this speech had gone on, and everybody was pretty much in agreement, and I got the gist of the message. But some people took that message and they only took the two words when he said "you people," and they took that "you people" as meaning immigrants that have just come over just now, and a certain type of people. And that's not what he said. What the way I took it anyways was "you people" as being, as the collective, as being immigrants, Canadian immigrants, people that live here, like myself, my family. Like we're only like third or fourth generation in here. Like my family there came from Ukraine and other, I think Poland as well. And my grandmother, well, she was from here, but she was a Cree Indian from Alberta that my grandfather married into. But my great grandfather, like, they had come over to Canada back then, and during the wars and stuff like that. So I sort of understood what he was saying about the whole part about "you people." Well, the following day, after much backlash from the social justice warriors and the SJWs and the cancel culture and the people that figured they were talking about them, and he never used any type of terminology, I guess, besides saying "you people" instead of saying "everybody," but they took it to meaning that it was talking specifically about them. And that's the part where things get sort of a little bit funny, is that you get these groups like these SJWs, and this will sort of fall back into the part later on with this open society. And they create groups and to cause this sort of this discourse, and what is being said is taken sort of, I think, a little bit out of context. And so "you people" now is directly offensive now to new immigrants, the way the story sort of goes. And he's fired the next day. And I guess he was told also that he could maintain his job, I guess, if he apologize for what he was saying. But I understood what he was saying. He was saying that people are forgetting the past, and those two little words, "you people," were enough to get him fired. And his host there, or co-host with him, Ron McLean, went on afterwards, and he apologized, saying that what was said was wrong and in distaste and whatever. Basically, I guess, sort of threw Don Cherry under the bus in a way people sort of think about it in a way. And it's just the way that this culture has sort of gone there with this totally either believe what we say or believe our point of view, or we erase you or we cancel you. And like what the SJW, social justice warriors, is that you have an opinion and your opinion ends when my feelings take hold. So now you don't have an opinion anymore, and because I feel this way, your opinion is moot or offensive, and so now we have to go in and remove you from speaking anymore. And you got to figure too is that Don Cherry was put on like for 38 years on Hockey Night in Canada. And I understand like this is not a big thing to a lot of people that live in other countries, I guess, in a way. But hockey is a big part of what Canada is. They consider it our national sport, even though lacrosse is, but it is a big part of coast-to-coast involvement of boys and girls, youth, teenagers, adults, all throughout Canada, and it is considered actually one of their favorite whatever national sports that is considered here anyways. So following day, there was a TV show on The Social on CTV, and which I found was really interesting is, so Don Cherry's fired for saying you people for not wearing a poppy or supporting the veterans and the ones that have fallen. So this, I get her name right here, Jessica Allen on The Social, which is on CTV News, and it's four female opinion personalities that give their opinions on everything, and on everything that's going on, I guess, in social media and socially throughout the country and throughout wherever else. I don't know. I really don't follow the show. I really didn't know who these people are, but they did come up in a story that followed along with this Don Cherry story. So this Jessica Allen, she goes on there and she goes on to a huge rant, and basically says that everything that Don Cherry was so offensive, and she has her opinion to say that. But then she turned around to say also that hockey players, whatever, are mostly white males and they are bullies, and parents that put their kids in hockey, that's wrong, and they should spend their money on taking their kids out on trips to go see the world, to not to be involved in this white male hate bullying predominant sport, which I find is sort of a little bit weird, even though I'm light skinned, but I'm also Métis. And if you're what she's talking about, that all hockey players are this, that are bullies, which I thought was funny, and that parents should go and travel and take your kids out of hockey, which is a team sport, which teaches teamwork, and you do travel if you're a part of the hockey sort of culture. You go out of town for tournaments and that, so you get to meet a lot of different people, and it's exercise. You go out and besides teamwork, exercise, meeting people, playing against competitively in sport. I don't know. I played it all my life. I played it since I was 4 years old, and I enjoyed it, met a lot of people. I traveled a lot. But this was her opinion that she gave. And afterwards, like, it was a long rant anyways that she went on about, and nothing was really said about it until later on, when all of a sudden now the culture comes back the other way, is going, how is she able to say all this stuff about hockey players and saying that it's mostly white males and bullies, and that it's not whatever to her standards as being socially viable, productive form of involvement or entertainment or sport, and that it's not enriching to a person's life. And so the culture came out about that, is that why is she able to say this? And and Don Cherry's kicked off and fired from TV for saying using the word "you people" instead of "everybody." So a lot of backlash, I guess, was thrown her way. And so about 4 days afterwards, people are asking for her job. Why isn't she fired? She makes an apology saying, "Hey, well, I don't apologize for anything about Don Cherry, but I apologize to families that are in hockey." And basically, I took it as a rant of my own personal experience. And so the rest of the three ladies on the social and other news agencies around here in Canada too, as well, have all supported her as being, because this is just crazy to me. I don't understand. I think opinion, and I think opinion is all valid in every way, but you shouldn't lose your job over it though. But one person did. And for her, when in my mind, saying something a lot worse is still there on this show. And it just sort of shows this whole part of this this culture that you've seen sort of change over the past many years, well, in my lifetime, from when I was born in 1970 up to now, and how you really have to watch and what you say, because someone is always going to find offense at what you say. And I was thinking about this earlier today. I was saying, what opinion can you give that would be inoffensive to everyone? And to me, I don't know, I couldn't really actually think of one, because someone's always going to have some sort of offense to what you say that it doesn't agree with them. And in today's society there now is that with the internet, your message gets out there a lot more, and a lot more people are sitting back that have no involvement, but they all have opinions, and they can join these groups, and it's almost like a tribalism in a way, and everybody can join up and show their disgust and their hatred or their opinion about why your opinion is wrong, and force you to be lose your job or lose your position or lose your platform from what you speak. And that's I always find that sort of interesting. So why is their opinion more important than your opinion? And that's the whole part of that I get from this whole Don Cherry thing. And not sure how this is going to end up, whether or not he'll be brought back on again, because in a way he's always been a controversial person, and that was the whole reason why he was on the show, was to give his opinion on what he thought. And they made a lot of money off of that for 38 years, and a lot of other people that were on the show made a lot of money off of that. But now that's as of right now, as it sits there, he's no longer on the air. They found a way to quiet him down. And it's been a long contention that a lot of people disagreed with him over the past years and wanted him fired a long time ago, and through many different things, but he always had a sort of a supporting their back. So they did have a support Don Cherry petition that was out there. I think it was up around 90,000 people had signed it to overturn this firing that had happened. Who knows whether or not that'll work or not. But that was just sort of my sort of little opinion into this sort of matter. That I always find it sort of how I find it sort of interesting, and how quickly things can turn, and how outrage can lead to and misunderstanding too, as well, can lead to such a decisive conclusion. But along with this, like, I'll get off of this part of it anyways about this Don Cherry thing. But as it goes into this part with this open society with George Soros, I'll tell you a little bit about who George Soros is. He today, I guess, he's billed as one of the 29th richest billionaires in the world. I think is there's a contention about how much he actually owns. I think it's anywhere from 15 to 30 something billion dollars. So that's a lot of change that he has, and a lot of influence that he has. And that's why he's been in the conspiracy world, is that he's been, I guess, doted in a way of influencing governments, influencing markets, influencing social change in countries that need to be, in his mind, changed. And what this, excuse me, who he is. Okay. So he was born in Budapest, Hungary, and today now he's a dual citizen of Hungary and the USA. He was born to a Jewish family, and at 13, when the Second World War was happening, his father paid the Ministry of Agriculture to take him in and say he was his Christian godson, so he'd avoid the Nazi internment. So his father had paid this money so that they wouldn't be thrown away or taken, whatever, even though they were a Jewish family. But what it says there anyways, they were like a non-practicing Jewish people, but Jewish nonetheless. And everybody knows what their history, what happened when the Nazi Germans came in, and what happened with the Jewish people, that horrific act that happened back then. And that's the whole reason for the poppy here today, what is worn in Canada, to remember what happened back then and the people that died stopping that, the axis of power from continuing on to do what they were doing. So anyways, while he was there, this Minister of Agriculture minister had taken him on as his godson, Christian godson. And when he was 13, he would go out with this guy, and what they were doing, they had to go out and appropriate the riches from the houses, from the Jewish houses and that. So he had learned it at an early age of, I guess, in a way, what power, who takes what and that. So he saw that with this changing who he was, and going along with this, going in and taking from the houses. So you get I always said there before, is that your past sort of dictates your future, and knowing your past, you sort of get a understanding about your mentality of whether it goes plus or minus, or positive, negative, and it sort of sculpts you to who you become, whether you take that negative influence from your youth to guide you in whichever direction you seem to follow to get you to your current state. So during this time there, when he was 13, he'd gone in and he'd gone along with this minister, and what they would do is they go into the houses and they would take out any valuables, and that was all taken to fund the Nazi war effort. And so he had seen this stuff there back then. And you'll see where this goes on as it goes on further on. So after the war, he'd gone to England there and went to ESU, the university there, and he studied merchant philosophy and basically business. And then later he'd come to the U.S., I believe it was in 1961. And he started a hedge fund dealing with money matters. And he looked into markets and dealing in the stock market. And that was in 1970, sorry. 61 is when he became a dual citizen. So in 1970, he started a hedge fund company and with investments, investing people's money in that. And in 92, he had studied the market as well, and he noticed that back in Europe, there was they're trying to centralize the money system between the countries in Europe to make sort of it easier, a flow between and with Britain there. And I believe it was called the NFW. This is all before the euro came into effect. And he saw that there was problems in the market with the market share with the dollars in between countries and that. And he saw it in 92, he saw this advantage there with England, with their money there. And he'd basically, it was called whatever the Black Friday of 19 or of the market there. And he basically, he's the man who broke the English bank there with investments and money, buying and selling money in that. He made $1 billion. He's the only one to make $1 billion in one day profit. And that's what he was doted with there. And with that, with his money, he kept on dealing with other investments and looking in other global markets. And this is where part of the conspiracy comes in with George Soros and his involvement. He's been widely publicized as meddling in political aspirations in different countries to benefit in a way himself, right? And so there's been countries that have removed a vast open society foundation there to remove them out of their country. And I think he's a big problem there. He has a big problem with the US and also with China as well. So in the interviews about what he had done, you got to figure that what he's looked at is that his philosophy, well, he doesn't believe in God. And he believes that he lies in between perception and reality. And he's sort of in that gray area. And that's basically where his financial thinking and this democratic thinking of this open society foundation. He has his own terms of how market and how society should work. And when he looks at it, when he's dealing with in business, there is his words, not mine, is that it's better for him to take the money than it's to go to someone else. And this goes back to the part there, back from what he learned back when he was 13, is it better that he's taken the stuff than somebody else has taken it. And I think that's where he sort of got that idea from. So when he's looking at market, when he's going in there, and everybody looks towards George Soros because he is such a prominent business person in the world market. They follow sort of his leader, what he's doing. And like I said, it's better that he's out to win everything. So whatever, he doesn't care about the repercussions of what it does to other people. But as long as he's getting the money, that's in it for him. So he's been noted to with the OSF there. They've been in countries like the USA, Asia, Africa, Eurasia, Latin America, and the Middle East. And as I said before, is what the OSF does is how do you say this in a way there, is that they give grant money and funding to people's organizations and movements to create social change in a country. So the countries that they're in are in USA, like I said, Asia, Africa, Eurasia, Latin America, and the Middle East. And so if to be a part of the Open Society Foundation, all you have to be is prescribed to their democratic way of thinking along their rules, as to be transparent, democratic, and accountable for your actions, and create social change in that market. And later on, what happened in, if I jump ahead here a little bit, in 2015, the OSF Foundation was hacked, and I think over 2,000 documents were taken out of there, and it showed that they had it exposed a political tampering in Europe and Russia and other places too. In 2000 in Serbia, they tampered with the government there to change the government directive and who's in power. They in Georgia in 2003, they were involved in the Rose Revolution. In Ukraine in 2004, they were involved with the Orange Revolution. In Kyrgyzstan in 2005, the Tulip Reservation Revolution. In Albania, George Soros needed a new person to be in contact, to be a go-between to change social change in there. So they needed somebody on the inside. So he contacted a good friend of his, Hillary Clinton, and they sent over an envoy and a person there in the position, which could be a go-between between the OSF Soros's foundation and the U.S. And that was through Hillary Clinton. And George, the thing about George Soros, though, is that with his meddling in elections in the States, he had spent $25 million to stop the second term presidency of George Bush. And he funded afterwards, he funded Obama. He also funded Hillary's campaign. And Hillary also supported the OCF, George Soros, as well through the State Department. And this is a part where it goes through into the conspiracy there. Conspiracy is monies in 2006 before Obama left office. He gave $9 million of government tax, U.S. tax money, and gave it to the OSF Soros's fund for NGO programs, non-government organizations. And so that's a big thing of what this OSF does, is it does NGOs, non-governmental organizations. So if the monies they have through, and he's called a philanthropist, but I guess you really can't be called a philanthropist if you're spending money that's given to you by the United States taxpayer. You're not spending your own money, you're spending somebody else's money. But this money goes towards these NGOs that create social change and organizations in different countries throughout the world. And what it is to do is to change the government structure and the constitution and in these different countries to make it more accessible for people like George Soros and people like the Committee of 300 and other people involved in this New World Order, this hierarchy there, to create this one system, one government, to create a cohesive marketing and flow of people. And with this flow of people, he was also the OSF funded an app which taught immigrants how to illegally enter into countries and to benefit from its services, and how to circumvent the legal entrance into a country. And this was all covered up. It was mentioned briefly in the news, but it figures that with George Soros and the company that he keeps and the companies that own these media corporations and a process of what the OSF does, besides starting these social media projects to get these disenfranchised and these other people that are looking for a cause to stand behind, to get them together, to voice their opinions, to form groups, to fight or not fight, or to, what's a better word than fight, I would say, to oppose or to bring awareness to their cause into the government through protests, through protests, marches, social media, on the internet, create groups to create like the SJW group there to create this tribalism council culture to go against opinion that is against anything what the OSF believes and stands for. And their part is what they stand for is a democracy, open border, transfer of people and goods throughout the world, which I guess sort of sounds good, but that's also what the New World Order wants. They want a one world government, one non-religion central money system that is controlled by this New World Order government or controlling system. And that's sort of the way that you can see how this OSF company sort of works. And they fund different groups, and they've been noted to fund, besides different social media and advocacy groups, they've been noticed to give funding to Black Lives Matter, Antifa here in North America, people that have opinions against anything that's sort of negatively against the OSF. They want this sort of this change and this overturning of government to have people in place in government position to agree with their sort of policies. And you can see what happened here with his funding of Obama and support with Hillary Clinton, because he's on the DNC side, and gives a sort of left-leaning philosophy, which is, I guess, with the Democrats there, is why they were so upset with when Trump got into office, and why you have this impeachment going on, why they don't want him to be in there later on, why they wanted Hillary Clinton in there, because Hillary Clinton, her husband, Bill, is on the Committee of 300. His name is listed in there, and you can look these up. The Committee of 300 on the internet, it gives you a list of who is on there. Monarchy, George Soros, Clinton, Al Gore, Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, you know, with him there, one of the richest men and billionaires in the world, also a proponent or a supporter of eugenics. And if you don't know what eugenics is, it's basically to get rid of unpopular genes, and to basically, in a nutshell, is get the good genes together to repopulate with good genes, get rid of the bad genes, and then in a sort of a short form version way. But you can also look that up too as well, what the whole part of that is. And also with the Open Society Foundation, they do have a site that is on YouTube, and they have hundreds of videos on there explaining their details of what they do. They have a step-by-step plan which they like to implement in countries, and what they're like, they do sort of, I guess, in a way create sort of, they want to create this social change, and by implementing programs, like they don't implement any programs, they're basically like the brain trust to give the ideas to bring into parliament, into government, so that these programs sort of run. And they do, if you go onto their site, which is sort of fun, it almost seems sort of cultish in a way, but not saying that it is, but they want to have this open society. What they believe is the part is that get into teaching children when they're young. They want to change how the school structure works. And the school structure, as you know, doesn't really work as well, work that well as anyways. Like, it's a government mandated learning facility where you go in and you basically regurgitate what you're told. You sit there day to day. And I remember this, I had blisters on my hands there. Sit there and you write in your notebook what is written down on the board. And then you get tested on what you were told. And that's basically how school basically runs. Well, they like to have the same thing as, but they have it with their ideas. And they have said a baby in the, what is born is open to ideas. So that they can teach the child when it's young their philosophy on social change, social interaction, how free market, how open society, open country, open borders should be. So now you're programming young kids as they were programmed in the other system into this way of thinking. And this is what a lot of this part with the social media projects do, is they come up, they have an idea and they get people that are sort of not involved in anything, but and they get them to fall in line or to sort of follow along with this and then to react to anything that is against their sort of way of thinking. And you see this a lot in what's happening there with these Antifa groups and with these marches and other groups. Not saying that they're all connected to the OSF, but you can see where they get a lot of their ideas from. And where this sort of this funding comes into when George Soros or Georgi Schwartz, as he was originally named, when you cause this sort of this these different ideas and social change in populations, you get them going, and you can get enough people there thinking a certain way to get that change to go in the direction that you want. And when I talked there last week there briefly on Edward Bernabas, I think it was Edward. Burnaby, I believe I said his name was, and he was noted as the man who got who changed America in a way. He'd found a part through his books, or he was a now I'm really rambling on nothing there, but what he had talked about was that you can make change through media and instead of fighting a war where you have to just force people in bluntly, you can change their ideas and opinions through media, news, and I believe the part was there is that he had the during the women's movement and working in conjunction with the cigarette companies, he got the women to march. And during their media, he had cameras point on the people, point on the women marching and lighting up a cigarette and calling them the freedom torch. And we don't need a man to light our cigarettes. And the following day, this was passed through the news media, and women were out buying cigarettes and showing their solidarity and against the tyranny of a male-dominated world, and that women were strong. But that's just the whole way of how social manipulation works. And this is part of what this OSF sort of does. It finds a way to get people that don't have an opinion to have an opinion, to have a group think, and then to act out on this group think to change democracy in the way in which the Soros democracy thinks. So you look at here what's happened recently in the States, or even here in Canada. So you have a group think that says climate change is a problem. So you have this person, Greta Thunberg, who becomes the spokesperson for climate change. And you look at when people come into, the media spectrum, you have to look back at who is funding these people. So if you look back at who is funding is the One Foundation, I think it was Bono from U2 is involved in that, but also Bill Gates and George Soros is also involved in that too as well. So they're not funding these organizations and these media spectacles that are they're running along with this girl. And who is she also involved with is this other lady, a German climate activist named Luisa Marie Neubauer. And you get this scenario or doctrine to come in to talk about climate change. And where did they come in? They came into Canada the week before the election, and they come across and talk about climate change and how bad it was for the people of here to propose to, in a way, sort of a, like a propaganda to push this idea and to push the idea that climate change is we're at the brink, we're done, the earth is done in 18 years, we're going to be flooded out, which is all science that it has not been proven at all. But to see, this is the push an agenda to create a group speak to push a political agenda that works up into the government and to get people thinking in a way of thinking and not have them research or think about these things themselves. So if you, the conspiracy, I guess I'd say out of this part here is that there's a lot of filler in this soup. There's no meat, no fat, no substance that allows you to think, that it grows your brain to think on things. And when you see that, I guess in my part of this conspiracy that I would think is that when you see that social groups and you see this opinion being snubbed out and being dismissed, and groups that are fighting for certain causes in different parts around the world, you have to look at who are the people that are funding these causes. What is the purpose for these causes, and what is the outcome? Is there any good outcome out of what is being done? And some things, protests and those things, there are good in many ways. But when you're dealing with tyranny or people being, discounted. But you have to also look at the part is that what is the effect of this and how is this affecting everybody else in a way? Is that if it's just your opinion that global climate, global change is something that's there and the world is going to end, is irreversible in 18 years, but you've done no research yourself to see if any of these facts are true. Then you sit on that sort of camp, whereas if you go and you look at it to see who's involved in these different groups, like say this OSF group, George Soros, who has been known to meddle in politics and markets throughout the world, looking for an outro or a final New World Order type regime at the end, you have to look at who's he involved in and all the different groups that are involved with that to see, is that the final outcome that you want to have happen? And by supporting some of these groups without doing any research into them, is are you actually supporting something else than what you are supporting in the first place? So there's a long ways around it anyways to deal with that soup. But thank you very much for tuning in. And I'll see you all next week.
A routine is a good thing to have. And sometimes a routine is a good thing to break. Break free. Start your morning at McDonald's with a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, or sausage McGriddles for just $1 each. And add any size soft drink for just $1 more. Because if you don't deserve a morning that's a little easier and a lot tastier, who does? Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Whataburger has been making breakfast for almost 40 years. And burgers for almost 70 years. So, making a breakfast burger with fresh 100% beef, a hand-cracked egg, bacon, cheese, hash browns, and our creamy pepper sauce seems kind of obvious, right? Of course it does. Now. Good thing there's the new limited-time breakfast burger. Served 11 p.m. to 11 a.m. at Whataburger.